Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. In 2018, Malaysia's civil society and human rights community had welcomed the Pakatan Harapan era with high expectations that the new government would make good on their promises for sweeping institutional reform. However, many civil society organizations still remember the government's backtracking and its stall reform efforts in those 22 months. Now, will Anwar Ibrahim's incoming coalition government be any different? And what do activists expect from this administration? Over the next half an hour, we'll speak to activists in different fields about their expectations for the pace and the scope of reforms by this new government. Joining us first is child activist Dato' Dr. Hartini Zainuddin, co-founder of Yayasan Chowkit. Tini, thank you for joining me on the show tonight. Now, through your work, you have seen the impact of our citizenship policy on stateless persons, especially on stateless children. Now, all of this falls under the purview of the Home Ministry. So, as the Prime Minister is now in midst of putting together his coalition cabinet, I mean, he's probably picking the Home Minister right this very moment. We never know. Well, what do you think are the considerations that you hope goes into choosing the person who will hold this portfolio?
Well, you know, I think my friends and I working in this field are looking for and praying for someone who doesn't swing so far right and is so... dismissal, I think, of human rights violations and child rights violations as well. I think what we saw in terms of the way the whole statelessness and citizenship issue was handled was quite shocking, to say the least, knowing the fact that, you know, there's so much discrimination, especially from the gender point of view. But also, you know, in other things that that we've been working on, especially in child rights as well, the alternative to detention of children is something that we've been working on for 9 years. The fact that the previous Home Minister had insisted and only focused on the national security issue without, you know, balancing that with a more child-centered, child protection point of view and understanding the fact that many of those in detention were children, which is one of the most vulnerable groups, and insisting that they were in violation of immigration law and calling them criminals was something that was just did not sit right. So, sit right with so many of us. So we're hoping that this new Home Minister, whoever Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim chooses, is someone who's a little more more centered, I guess, in terms of looking and balancing out the needs of the of you know, protecting our National Security Act, but understanding at the same time that children are not the threat. And that there are other issues and other factors that come into play, as well as looking again and reviewing the whole issue on statelessness and citizenship. So those are two of the things. And there's, of course, many others. Anti-trafficking laws, immigration, birth registration, the whole issue on welfare and child protection. Well, welfare definitely under the Ministry of Women, but any issue that you touch that has to do with refugees or marginalized groups, or, you know, and the impact, whether it's trafficking or forced labor, et cetera, and stuff, falls under the purview for the Home Minister. So I'm praying, as most of us are, that the Home Minister is a little more central in position.
You touched a little bit on welfare, mentioning that it falls under the Ministry of Women. Do you think that is the institutional configuration that should remain, that should go forward?
No, of course, what I would love, is, as YB Hanayo has said, is that we really, really need an entire separate Ministry of Children. Just looking into the protection and welfare of children and how... So the pandemic, especially after the pandemic, has impacted children and their families and communities as well. And again, I'm talking about marginalized groups. And again, I'm talking about groups that have been sort of pushed aside, including children with disabilities, etc., and the elderly. And, you know, I'm sorry, but the way in which food security was handled during the pandemic was not perfect, but it was not even the best. And, you know, and as you can tell, you know, and as you know, Melissa, during the pandemic, it was the neighborhood and the communities and the citizens who actually had to step up and fill in the gaps. So I'm hoping, you know, that again, Datuk Sri will consider all of this and look at ensuring that CSOs and NGOs and community leaders and staff are included in the process of decision making right from the very start and not in the end. And whoever they pick as minister or head of the children's ministry, which would be amazing, would be someone who really understands the issue and look at the root causes and not dismiss it and just go in with intervention or not look at it at all, which is when, again, what happened in the past.
Right. Tini, you know, the Pakatan Harapan governments in 2018 came under heavy criticism that they didn't weren't fast enough with reforms in the 22 months. There was talk about squandering that time, not pushing through those really difficult reforms. Mm-hmm. But yet there was also, on the other side, a very impatient public with extremely high expectations for, decades of administration policies to be undone in that quick time. What do you think we've learned, both voters and government, in terms of managing expectations about what can be achieved, particularly in this period, in the first a couple of years?
Well, I think the first thing we need to realise is to lower our just be realistic and temper our expectations to understand the reality of what's going around and what's going on. We're a very young country who's had to change a system that's been in place for 60 years, and expecting anybody to change the way things are run in 18 months was a little, I think, too much for us to expect at what point in time. I think the impatience comes with the fact that we want it change and we want it change to happen immediately, but we forgot that, you know, that the systematic change takes time, not only to understand the gaps, but then to come up with a strategy to minimize the gaps and to change behavior, which is really what it's all about, right? It's not just about changing systems. It's about changing behavior and attitude, understanding definitions, ensuring that, you know, you share the same language in terms of definition, mm-hmm. then only can you move forward. So I think this time we will, I know that for us as activists in the child rights space and looking at poverty, et cetera, I know that I think we'll be a little more patient, we understand. But at the same time, with those expectations, we also, I think, are hoping that, like I said, that we have a space and a place to be able to help with the decision-making and making those issues or identifying what the issues are from the very beginning and not come in for a bengal or, you know, just show that, you know, they've done some work with CSOs right at the very end because we're the token. That's not going to happen, I hope. I think we're a little more practical at this time, a little more pragmatic at the same time, but also understanding that, you know, I think, you know, the lessons learned and the painful mistakes of the past will be repeated again.
Tini, thank you for joining me on the show tonight. Dr. Hartini Zainuddin from Yayasan Chowkit. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Expectations are high for Anwar Ibrahim's incoming administration to continue the reform agenda that was started in 2018. To discuss this further, I have joining me on the line climate action activist Mina Rahman. She's the president of Sabah Alam Malaysia. Mina, the Prime Minister has already said he wants to keep this cabinet small and lean. And what this could mean is that some of the ministries may be combined or even have ministers who hold double portfolios. The ministry in charge of environmental governance has always had many different permutations in the past. You know, it's been Ministry of Energy and Water and Technology and Land and Natural Resources and Climate Change and all of that kind of combined. I'm just wondering, Mina, what institutional arrangement would make sense to you, particularly in the face of Malaysia's readiness to deal with the climate crisis?
Actually, Melissa, I do think that climate change must come under the Prime Minister's department. As strange as it may seem, my view is that it's about time that climate change actually is not seen as a side issue or a side effect, or even in that case, environment seen as a side effect of development and commercial activities, because I do think that the climate change must come under the Prime Minister's Department and most notably under the Economic Planning Unit. Because we are talking about growing low carbon, which is across all sectors. We are talking about sustainable development goals, and the EPU is the institution that deals with sustainable development goals, which includes climate change. And given what we have seen in Pakistan, for example, what we really have to do is to expect loss and damage of very serious proportions. Just to give you a state of play, we know that more than 33 million people were displaced or affected during the recent catastrophic climate-induced floods in Pakistan, which is almost like the whole population of Malaysia. And I heard in Egypt when I was there from the Minister of Planning, and what he was basically saying is that 30 billion dollars in damages. Now that's a huge proportion. So it's about time that climate change comes under the purview of the Prime Minister's Department with the Economic Planning Department, giving this very high priority to build our climate resilience, to handle loss and damage, and to go on the low carbon pathway. We cannot see this as an environment ministry and give it to the, not place it on high priority. I think it's about time we place this on very, very high priority and on the radar of the Prime Minister's Department itself.
Yeah, I agree with you about placing on high priority, particularly because, I wonder whether this administration will see this as a key portfolio. We have some cabinet seats that are considered key. People fight over them, home and finance and education. But whether the portfolio of the environment and climate change will be considered one that is key and prioritized. What do you think, Mina?
I think you're absolutely right. For the longest time, environment and most recently climate change, as I said, is being seen as a side issue. We have to develop first, we have to move with commercial activities first, and so we can tackle the side effects through the Ministry of Environment with environmental laws and impact assessments and so on. We can't do that anymore. It's time for a massive paradigm shift. I know that the Prime Minister himself is very concerned about climate change before he became Prime Minister. But when he was in the opposition leader, we had the opportunity to meet him and stress the importance of climate change. He was at that time very keen on actually having a parliamentary committee on climate change. So now I really hope that he will prioritize this front and center. Because, Melissa, we have to begin to make decisions in relation to how we produce and how we consume with a climate change lens. Now, you can't build infrastructure or bridges or, dams or highways and planning policies without looking at the climate lens. Just to give you an example, the Minister of Planning of Pakistan said that during the 2010 floods that Pakistan had, they had built bridges. They took into account the floodwaters and they built the bridges. Come 2022, the amount of downpour that had happened was not foreseen. All the bridges were washed away. And I said 33 million people displaced. Now, this is huge, and we are going to be seeing climate impacts never seen before. So this is no longer a side effect. Same with water sustainability. We have a water crisis in the Klang Valley and all the factories shut down. We have to begin to realize that we cannot go on like this any longer. Floods in this country are not just, some event with the monsoons. They're going to be much more serious, as we have seen, and they will get even more serious. So this is why my real concern and plea and hope is that the Prime Minister's Department would actually, under the EPU, pay very high priority to climate change. Of course, the Ministry of Environment, there has to be, and it also has to take care of forests and biodiversity. We cannot have forests in one ministry, environment in another ministry, water in one ministry, energy in another ministry. It just doesn't make sense. We have to look at the biodiversity, we have to look at water, we have to look at forests, we have to look at rivers, because we have to begin to look at the environment and biodiversity as the foundation of our economy. No forests, no water, no economy. And if you don't pay attention to climate change, there is no economic development. Your GDP will be wiped out in a matter of days. And I think this is why it's about time we had a paradigm shift and a mindset shift on how we treat the environment and climate change.
Right. Minas, CSOs like Sahabat Alam Malaysia has, you know, done a lot of work in this area. What can the incoming administration do to better engage CSOs? I'm wondering what you would like to see improve in terms of cooperation with CSOs, communication with CSOs, beyond just checklist ticking that, you know, you've done the consultation with civil society.
I think you're absolutely spot on again, Melissa, with your question. Not because I like you on the show, but really, I think that's really critical, because it's not about tokenism anymore. There is a lot of wealth and experience and expertise within civil society, and even with those who work with the frontline communities. There is a lot that we can bring, and there is a lot to share. And I do think that the government alone is not the sole knowledge repository. The repository must come from a wide range of the public, particularly with CSOs who have been doing this work for a long time, on the front lines as well, working with the fisherwork, working with the farmers, working with the indigenous peoples and the communities. And I hope that this government, which the Prime Minister Anwar has talked about being much more close to the grassroots, and I do hope that he will pay a strong heed to the need for listening to the voices of civil society and communities and engaging us in contributing to the well-being of this country.
Mina, always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your time. Mina Rahman from Sabah Alam Malaysia. Another very quick break here on the show. We will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hello, I'm Melissa Idris. Thanks so much for staying with me on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about civil society's expectations for the pace and the scope of reform by Anwar Ibrahim's incoming coalition administration. Our next guest is anti-corruption activist K. Sudhakaran Stanley. He's the program manager at the advocacy group Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, better known as C4. Stanley, thank you for joining me on the show tonight. Now, in the last two elections, Pakatan Harapan had campaigned on an anti-corruption platform. And at Anwar Ibrahim's first press conference as Prime Minister, he spoke about his zero tolerance approach to corruption and abuse of power. I'm wondering, Stanley, what you will be watching out for to make sure that this is not just lip service by Anwar or by his incoming government. In terms of actual implementation and structural reforms, what will you be watching for these anti-corruption efforts?
Thanks, Melissa, for having me on the show once again. I think, first of all, I'd like to congratulate all Malaysians who came out in droves on the 19th of November to actually make the change that we all want to see about happening in this country. I think the collaboration that has taken place between Barisan and the PH government gives us a very good opportunity right now actually to sit down with the Barisan National Government, particularly with the UMNO political party, and to look eye to eye on certain of these reforms that we have been pushing for a number of years. Now, we do know that these reforms that we talk about, for example, the whistleblower protection, the reforms to MACC, judicial independence, asset declaration, and so on, many of these reforms was initiated during the first stint of Pakatan Harapan in 2018, and the research was completed, the consultation session was completed, but it was not yet brought into Parliament. So right now, we have all these researchers which has been completed, all these reforms that all these consultations has already been done. It's only a matter of actually bringing this into Parliament and actually passing certain laws to enable all these reforms to take place. So we really hope that the new Prime Minister, Anwar Ibrahim, will push forward all these reforms that they've been talking about seriously and really, really to sit down with UMNO. And it's a great opportunity to actually allow them to understand why this reforms is actually important for our country and why we are trying to push these certain reforms and see eye to eye with them and also try to understand their some of their worries and their perception on some of these reforms that we're trying to push forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'm glad that you brought it up, Stanley. The challenges for a coalition government, particularly we have Pakatan Harapan and Barisan Nasional, what makes a coalition government work is the basis of kind of shared goals and objectives. Do you think that in this respect, for the issues of anti-corruption and good governance, that this coalition government will be effective in seeing through these reforms, seeing eye to eye and pushing through these reforms?
That's a very good question, Lisa. And I think, again, I stress the point that it gives us an opportunity to actually sit down at the same table with the UMNO government and try to explain to them why are we actually calling for some of these reforms. For example, we talk about the police reforms. This was very heavily objected by UMNO when the IPCNC was stable in Parliament. So now we actually have the opportunity and look at what their worries are and try to push forward some of our views on this matter and to see if it could come actually to common ground and try to push for this reform. But having said that, Melissa, I think there are certain areas that no compromise can be made. And I think one of those areas would be in regards to the appointment of those that are being charged for corruption into cabinet positions or, for that matter, any other GLC positions and so on. And this applies to everyone. There are people being charged for corruption in UMNO, there are people being charged for corruption in DAP, in MUDA. I think none of them should actually be involved in this decision-making process or let alone actually be in cabinet.
Stanley, you mentioned a bit earlier that some of the research and consultation for these key reforms, you know, like reforms of MACC, of the whistleblower protection, all of that has been actually done under the National Anti-Corruption Plan and under the first administration of Pakatan Harapan. So where do we go from here? I mean, reforms often are not easy to push through, yet the public can be quite impatient because, you know, we understand how important these institutional reforms are, yet so much has been said, very little action has happened. How would you manage the expectations of how long it would take? Are we just at the very tail end of just pushing through these reforms?
I think while the research and all this, the research and the consultation session has been completed, now the next challenge is now to actually make the coalition partners, particularly from Barisan Nasional, to understand again why are we actually pushing for this reform. Okay. There are so many references that can be made, and we from C4, I think I also need to tell this, that we want to offer even our services here. We would also like to come in and offer our help to the new Prime Minister to engage even with political parties like UMNO and other components in Barisan Nasional to actually talk to them and explain to them, you know, why these reforms are important. And the next step would, of course, be with the agreement of all the coalition partners, and we can see eye to eye on issues, for example, the reforms on MACC, Ombudsman, very important reform, political financing. In fact, political financing was one that was promised under Barisan Nasional's manifesto. So these are some of the, as a starter point, I think, common reform areas, for example, the political financing that was already initiated during Pakatan Harapan and then promised by Ismail Sabri's government. Common areas such as these can actually already be implemented even in the first parliament sitting because the research is all there, it's all completed, right? So these are first issues that we can actually push forward in parliament. The more harder ones like the IPCNC, for example, the public procurement and so on, that this would require, of course, consultation between the different political parties, and we really hope that all of this would be brought back center stage and implemented within these 5 years. Because remember, Melissa, the National Anti-Corruption Plan was a 5 years plan. It was it was launched in 2019. It's supposed to end in 2023. We are just 1 year away from the National Anti-Corruption Plan, and we are terribly actually performing in terms of our implementation. So we don't need to go and look anywhere else. Just bring back the National Anti-Corruption Plan, which is the key government agenda, and implement those reforms fully. And we at C4 are happy to help the government to actually bring forward and give consultation sessions in regards to this report. Mm-hmm.
There's not much time to get that 5-year plan sorted, right? Thank you so much, Stanley, for joining me on the show. K. Sudhakar and Stanley from C4 Group. They're wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.